This is the time set for oral argument in the writ petition, Canizaro versus District Court. We do not have a case following this one on this morning's calendar, so my request to the clerk has extended the argument time to 20 minutes per side because I anticipate a fair amount of questioning. Mr. Powers, are you ready to proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. For the record, Kevin Powers, Chief Litigation Counsel, LCB Legal Division, on behalf of the legislative defendants. I will be reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal argument. This case is controlled by the government lawyer exception in Rule 1.11. The district court ignored that government lawyer exception and ruled exclusively based on Rule 1.7. And that is where the district court committed a manifest abuse of discretion. What the district court and the plaintiff senators had represented in this case is that LCB somehow has the power or discretion to pick sides in litigation. LCB does not have that under the statute. The statute gives discretion to the legislative commission or the chair to direct LCB legal to intervene, prosecute, defend in any action or proceeding. That discretion, once exercised by the legislative commissioner or the chair, then becomes a statutory legal duty on behalf of LCB legal to represent the legislative defendants in this case, and that legal duty is the reason the exception exists in Rule 1.11 with the government lawyer exception. The drafters of the professional conduct rules realized that government attorneys are going to have statutory duties and responsibilities and powers that require them to provide legal representation to their clients despite the conflict of interest rules that ordinarily apply to private counsel in private settings.
How does 218F720 expressly permit a lawyer to represent clients adverse to pre-existing clients?
We read the exception meaning the express permission has to be, the representation has to be expressly permitted by the statute. In this case, the statute provides for that representation. It says the legislative commission or the chair may direct LCB legal.
But it doesn't say that there is an exemption to the rules of ethics that ordinarily apply to all lawyers in this state.
That's true. But that would be an unusual way of drafting a statute. I don't think the drafters of the model rule creating the exception expected every statute that created government duties to represent their clients to also say, and the conflict of interest rules do not apply. In fact, I did a search. I could not find any statute in this country that had a similar provision. So the exception would make very little sense if the statute had to say, and the conflict of interest rules do not apply.
That's how do you say under the standard of review that there's a manifest abuse of discretion by the district court?
Because it was an error of law. The government lawyer exception is a legal provision. The district court didn't even discuss it in its order. It mentioned the government lawyer exception, but it had probably no analysis whatsoever. As a matter of law, when the district court doesn't follow this government lawyer exception, that's the manifest abuse of discretion, a clear error of law.
Well, let me go at this another way. Do you represent, when you confer with a legislative client about a bill draft request, when your division does, there's a confidentiality statute that says that's confidential and privileged. Is that right?
That is correct.
So you could not be summoned as a lawyer to testify to what you and a particular legislator discussed. Is that right?
That is correct.
And can you tell one legislator what another asked you to about?
No, the confidentiality statute prohibits that.
So we have Senator Stettemeyer's affidavit that says he discussed this, I don't know if it was with you personally, but with LCB before the opinion was issued. Your position is there was an attorney-client relationship at that point between him and LCB?
Our position is that there was an organizational attorney-client relationship, which is different than an individual attorney-client relationship.
You warn them that that means that if any other member of the organization asks about a confidence that they thought they were posing in you, that you can tell the other legislators that?
No, because the difference is we have a confidentiality statute. So that prohibits us from telling one legislator what another legislator said.
It also says it's privileged, correct?
Correct. But that doesn't change it from an organizational attorney-client relationship to an individual attorney-client relationship. And the reason the statute exists...
But back in the day when I used to represent corporate entities and then they have individual officers and directors who are also in the conversation, you would counsel the individual officers and directors what they say is not confidential as against the entity or other officers and directors. But your point is, it is confidential, so that counsel is not given. So they think you're representing them.
They, because they're constituents of the organization, they have to realize that the LCB Legal represents the interests of the organization. Anything, advice we provide or services we provide to an individual legislator is for the benefit of the organization. It's not for the benefit of the individual legislator.
So, Mr. Power, so you don't take direction, like, from just the majority party to how to do things? I mean, any of the 63 legislators, regardless of party, if they're majority or minority, can come to the LCB and request information, whatever. How does that work? You know, how do you take who are your bosses here, you know, as far as running the organization?
From an individual legislator basis, you are correct. We don't take direction from the majority or the minority with regard to an individual legislator. We receive a request for opinion, a bill drafting request. We provide legal counsel to those individual legislators under the confidentiality statute. However, as far as taking direction on behalf of the organization, it's a majority rule concept. So if the legislature as a majority decides to direct us to do something, we would have to do that. And the statute here, 218F720, that power is in the legislative commission or its chair. If the legislative commission or chair directs us to provide representation, we have a duty to do so. Of course, the legislative commission as a public body has to exercise its power by a majority. And in this case, with regards to the petition for mandamus, that's what the legislative commission did. By a majority, directed us to file this petition to challenge the disqualification.
What do you say to the district court judge's observation that representing individual legislators against individual legislators, albeit in their official capacity, damages on an ongoing basis the essential neutrality of the LCB's role generally in providing services to the legislature as an organization?
We don't believe that's the case because we believe the public understands that defending the constitutionality of legislation, which we are doing here, is a public nonpartisan function. It's part of the constitutional structure of government. Every statute is presumed to be constitutional until its invalidity is otherwise established. So we are just defending the acts of the legislature. In addition, because the legislature is an organizational client, we represent legislators when they're acting as duly authorized constituents. In this case, because the two legislative defendants are part of defending the constitutionality of statutes, they're acting in the interests of the legislature, its official interest to defend its acts. The plaintiff senators, on the other hand, by suing their own organization, they're not acting as duly authorized constituents of the organization. And they have to realize that. If they challenge the organization and its acts, they're acting outside of the duly authorized constituent status, and they have to anticipate that LCB Legal will defend the constitutionality of legislation, regardless of what party voted for or against it. In this case...
But aren't you also arguing, though, that the two... that Senator Cannizzaro and her colleague are inappropriate defendants, and to that extent, you're representing them individually?
But in their official capacity. See, we believe plaintiff senators named the two individual defendants to avoid naming the legislature itself. For whatever strategy.
They're defendant intervener right now, the legislature.
Correct. The legislature has been granted intervener status. But this is a bicameral legislature. If Senator Cannizzaro and Secretary of Senate Cliff were proper parties, then every legislator who voted for the legislation in both houses should also have been named as individual defendants, but in their official capacity. But that's not how constitutional litigation works. We know that. You sue the administrative state officer charged with enforcing the law, and that's how you challenge the constitutionality of legislation. You don't sue individual defendants. With regard to our claim that they're not necessary and proper parties, that's true. They're not. But the problem here is that the plaintiffs believe that LCB Legal shouldn't even been able to raise that defense, that they're not necessary and proper parties. They believe LCB Legal should have been disqualified from the get-go. And that's just not the situation here. The reason the legislature enacted this statute is because it has a right to choose which counsel represents its legislative clients and its defendants when they're sued in their official capacity for performing legislative functions. The claims against the two individual legislative defendants have nothing to do with anything outside of the legislative process. They're being sued because of the Senate Majority Leader who introduced the bill and put the bill forth before the legislature, and the Secretary of Senate who performed the ministerial duty by declaring the bill passed in the Senate.
Is there a reason that the service was directed to LCB rather than them individually?
That's a good question. Plaintiffs' counsel, the day after they filed the First Amendment complaint, called LCB. They say the general line, and they were then transferred to LCB Legal. And on the phone, I had that conversation. I indicated that as counsel for the legislative defendants, we are willing to accept service. I don't understand why they didn't just serve them individually. NRCP 4 makes it clear how you serve a state officer. So they clearly understood that LCB Legal would be providing a legal defense. That's why they contacted LCB. They could have simply served each of the defendants, legislative defendants, individually, and then you also have to serve the AG under NRCP.
Mr. Powers, let me ask you this. The ultimate issue we're going to get to someday here is, can you extend a sunset tax by a majority vote versus a two-thirds vote? So ultimately, it's going to get to us. You know, somewhere, somehow, we'll have to, it's a legal question, we'll have to decide. That's what Supreme Courts do. So in your view, what's the legal mechanism to get that issue before the courts so it can be decided? What's your advice, and how should this case have been pursued?
Well, I think the case should have been pursued, one, the plaintiff businesses, who are the other plaintiffs in this case, because they pay the taxes and fees under these two statutes, they are standing to bring this type of case. And what do? You sue the administrative agencies or officers charged with enforcing the law, which they did name, the plaintiff centers and the other plaintiffs did name the Department of Taxation and the Department of Motor Vehicles, which is the correct way to pursue the case. However, the plaintiff centers added themselves as plaintiffs, and we're not conceding they have standing. That's an issue that's still to be resolved below. But they didn't need to be parties in this case. They chose to be. And then the legislative defendants didn't need to be parties in the case. The plaintiffs chose to put them in this case. They made a tactical and calculated litigation decision, knowing full well that LCB Legal, when they served us with the complaint the day after it was filed, understood that LCB Legal would be providing the defense. They essentially accepted this conflict of interest based on their litigation strategy, and they should be held accountable for doing that. But let's get back to the main issue, though. There is no conflict of interest because the drafters of the model rule created the government lawyer exception in Rule 1.11. It's there for a reason. Why else would it be there? If it doesn't apply here, I can't think of a situation where it would effectively apply.
Well, let me ask you this. Use an analogy to it, and you tell me if you think this applies or not. By law, statutory law, the Attorney General's office represents the Supreme Court and the district court judges when we're sued in our official capacity for whatever. So there are attorneys there, so we deal with. On the other hand, the Attorney General's office appears before us every day, you know, in arguments representing state agencies or other parties where we have to decide the cases, and we may decide adverse to them depending on what the issues are. So is That, I assume, is under Rule of Professional Conduct. 1.11 would be one of the reasons the Attorney General can do that. Is that a situation analogous to this situation?
I think the government lawyer exception would apply in that circumstance, is that even though the Attorney General does argue cases before this court is statutorily authorized under Chapter 41 to have the AG represent each of you individually in your official capacity if you're sued in a civil rights action or any other type of action, and that would allow the AG to still represent you individually. Also, this court adopts the model rules and the rules of professional conduct. When you do that, you're exercising a legislative capacity. So say you adopted a rule of professional conduct and one of your colleagues decided to sue the Nevada Supreme Court, which it could under the federal civil rights statute, because they believe that rule the Supreme Court adopted was unconstitutional. In that case, under this scenario, AG could not represent you, any of you in your individual capacity as defendants, because one of your colleagues, the Supreme Court justice, was suing you. That's the same situation here. And then you would all have to get outside individual counsel, and my guess, The remainder six would have to get separate counsel because one counsel can't remember represent all six of you if you have to get outside counsel. It would be the same situation. You would be acting in a legislative capacity to adopt rules of professional conduct. One of your colleagues sues you and say, hey, I sued you. Now you have to get your own outside counsel because I disqualify the AG because the AG also represents me.
And except that the AG didn't give confidential or have confidential conversations between all the parties, hypothetically, with what you're talking about in that type of lawsuit.
We had conversations, our office had conversations with Senator Sentemeyer, but if you look at his affidavit, he doesn't say that he divulged any confidential information. He just said he had conversations. Didn't say anything about confidentiality. And quite frankly, this is an issue of law.
To that point, Mr. Powers, is there anything in this record that shows that there was a confidential communication under the statute that the chief referenced earlier that occurred in this with respect to the issue in this case?
There's not. And one of the reasons there's not, this is an issue of law, the meaning of the constitutional provision. There'll be no fact-finding in the district court.
So there's no evidence in front of the district court, and there's nothing in the record in front of this court that shows any confidential communication under the previous the statute referenced by the chief, that this issue here is an issue in which LCB Legal is responding to a directive from the Legislative Council Commission to represent the legislature, and these two individuals, Senator Cannizzaro in her official capacity and the Secretary of the Senate in her official capacity. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I'm concerned about language which seems to me to be a bit inflammatory used by the district court judge on page 7 of the order. In that order, the judge says, further, the court finds it is not appropriate that LCB Legal pick sides by representing individual legislative members and officers against other legislative members. Is there any evidence before the district court, any affidavit, any declaration, any deposition, any admissible evidence in front of the district court, or is there any in this record that Ms. Erdos or you or any other member of LCB Legal picked sides?
There is not, Your Honor. There is simple.
Or that you chose to represent the majority in the Senate as opposed to the minority in the Senate.
There is nothing to that effect. We have a legal duty to provide the representation.
So your appearance in front of the district court and your appearance here is a result of the the Legislative Commission having voted that its legal counsel will defend the institution in this issue.
That is correct.
All right. So with respect to that point, we should focus our attention on whether the statute on which you have relied, NRS 218F720-6C, is an exception that is referred to or intended to be included in Rule of Professional Conduct 1.13 F and G, correct?
Correct.
All right.
That is the government.
Why do you think that statute fits within that governmental exception to 1.11 D?
Because the statute provides a legal duty for LCB to represent these legislative defendants. We have a legal duty to do it. That's what the drafters have contemplated with the government lawyer exception.
Okay. So the question, it seems, before our court is this. What the district court did find is, whether that's correct or not, but did find that there was a concurrent conflict. What's the basis of the district court's conclusion that there is a concurrent conflict between the senator plaintiffs and Senator Cannizzaro and the Secretary of the Senate?
Well, it's not because we represent the plaintiffs' senators in this action, but we don't. The district court seemed to conclude because the plaintiff senators received bill drafting services and legal opinions from LCD Legal that that created a separate attorney-client relationship that's ongoing, and so because there's an ongoing attorney-client relationship with them, LCD Legal can't represent both the plaintiff senators and legislative defense. But
what
that goes back to the organizational
relationship. How do you deal with 218F153, which says expressly, the nature and content of any work produced by the officers and employees of the legal division, that's you.
Correct.
And any matter entrusted to those officers and employees to produce such work are confidential and privileged. That's what the statute says. So
the communications are confidential and privileged, and I know that's different from the ordinary corporation organizational structure, but that's why the statute exists, is that it's an organizational client, and we only represent legislators' constituents, but we have an additional duty to keep their information confidential from other constituents of the organization. That doesn't change the organizational relationship of LCB Legal to those clients. And that's why the statute exists, to ensure that extra layer of confidentiality that organizational clients wouldn't otherwise have with their individual constituent members. It doesn't turn that into an individual attorney-client
so
relationship.
So, Mr. Powers, if you have a communication with Senator Cannizzaro about the handling of this litigation during the course of its prosecution, is that communication available to Ms. Peterson here?
No. That's confidential and privileged.
And what would be the basis for that being confidential?
It would be the statute that provides a confidentiality, not the separate attorney-client relationship. Because the legislative defendants are acting as duly authorized constituents of the organization, that's why we're representing them. Not because they're acting as individual legislators, because they're representing the organization.
So to the extent that you represent the senator in her official capacity going forward and engage in confidential communications at that point, why doesn't that create a concurrent conflict of interest in the litigation?
A conflict of interest with other legislators?
Yes.
It doesn't because of, one, the exception in Rule 0.11, because it's a government lawyer exception, it doesn't create the conflict of interest. But also because we are representing legislative defendants as duly authorized constituents. Their interest in defending the constitutionality of the statute is the same as the organization. They have the same institutional interest. If these legislative defendants had committed an act that wasn't consistent with the organization, we couldn't represent them. For example, and this is just
you're,
an example.
Past your total
yes,
time
you,
into Barbara. Your 2 minutes past. I'll give you 3 minutes, but that will be for rebuttal as well as talking now.
Okay.
And
thank
I'll
you.
Add 5 minutes to Ms. Peterson's time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Karen Peterson from Ellison McKenzie Law Firm, and I wanted to point out on the record today that Senator Settlemyer is here, Senator Hardy's here, Senator Pickard is here, and I believe Senator Hammond is here too. And thank you very much for hearing this matter so quickly. We really do appreciate that. So getting on to one of the questions that Justice Hardesty asked, there is nothing contained in the petition filed by the petitioners or their reply that talks about Rule of Professional Conduct 1.13G, which provides that, and that 1.13, the Rule 1.13, provides that LCB Legal is the attorney for the organization, and that it may also represent constituents or members of the organization, but it has to comply with.
Ms. Peterson, may I interrupt you? I'd like, since you started there, I think it's important to understand the record that's in front of us. Do you agree with Mr. Powers that there is nothing in the record, factually, that supports any conclusion that LCB Legal, Ms. Erdos, Mr. Powers, or the members of the legal division picked or chose to represent the organization or Senator Cannizzaro or the clerk, as opposed to being directed to do so by the Legislative Commission?
I see the record differently, Your Honor. They did pick and choose sides. They absolutely did.
Where in the record is there a choice made by LCB Legal to represent the Senator Cannizzaro in this case in her official capacity?
I'm assuming that LCB Legal gave advice to the Legislative Commission or the chair?
I don't want assumptions. Is there an affidavit? Is there testimony? Are there memos? Where in the record does it demonstrate that Brenda Urdos or Kevin Powers chose to appear and represent the legislature in this case before the Legislative Commission voted to do so?
There isn't anything, Your Honor.
All right. Now, you say you have a different perspective factually of the record. Is there anything in the record, any affidavit in the record, anything in front of us that shows that the legal division lawyers chose to represent Senator Cannizzaro and the legislature in this case without the decision of the Legislative Commission?
No.
All right.
But
it takes me back to the point I was trying to make with Mr. Powers, the question I had for Mr. Powers. Does the statute on which he cites provide a basis for the exception under 1.11d? And is there actually a concurrent conflict as expected under 1.7? And if what is the basis from your perspective of the concurrent conflict that we should honor under 1.7?
The LCB Legal has an attorney-client relationship with the legislature and with the constituents, the members of the legislature. And that's clear based on the statutes that you all have cited earlier today. Also included in the definition of NRS 218F.720, subsection 6. So there's definitely an attorney-client relationship there. Senator Settlemyer's affidavit shows that there was an attorney-client relationship there. And LCB Legal held itself out. We attached that information to our reply filed in front of the district court. Holds itself out to all the new legislators that it's their legal counsel. So that's where that is. What I have a problem with of how they're interpreting their statute and the rules of professional conduct is that they're admitting that they don't even do an analysis. LCB Legal, the attorney, doesn't even do an analysis if there's a conflict of interest under NRS 218F.720 because it relies on its client to make the determination of whether they can proceed in litigation. So basically what they're saying is that the legal counsel doesn't have to do any kind of conflict analysis, and because we're directed by our client, LCB, the Legislative Commission, or the chair of the Legislative Commission, we don't have to do a conflict, and the rules of professional conduct disappear. And that's not the proper analysis. The client doesn't get to tell the lawyer whether the lawyer has a conflict or not, or whether the lawyer owes an ethical obligation to another client.
So on that point, if I might interrupt you, because I know we're operating on limited time. In the reply brief, the argument is made that in suing Senator Cannizzaro and the clerk of the Senate, I guess that's the correct title, in their official capacity, it was the equivalent of suing the organization. They cite a U.S. Supreme Court case, Ex parte Young, and the Restatement Third of Law Governing Lawyers. Since this popped up in the reply, I was wondering if you could address that issue. In effect, the argument, as I understand it, goes that by suing a senator and the clerk in their official capacity, they have sued, you all have sued, the organization. I assume you would agree that, and in my reviewing of the complaint, there's nothing in the complaint that provides a basis for a suit against Senator Cannizzaro or the clerk in their individual capacity. I assume you agree with that.
I agree.
So could you comment on what seems to be the law that if you sue somebody in their official capacity, you have sued the organization, not the individual?
Well, I have read U.S. versus Young, and that's not what that case says.
Okay. Could you comment on why you don't feel that holding that's represented here is appropriate?
The argument that they're making?
No. The holding in Young and the observation in the restatement third, that that's the effect.
Well, in this instance, under the statute 218F.720, the legislature is also defined as the members.
Mm-hmm.
And so going back to some of the other cases where the LCB legal has represented individual members of the legislature in their separate capacity, maybe when they had a complaint against the Ethics Commission or something like that, I mean, under that argument, the LCB legal wouldn't be able to represent those individual members because it would be representing the organization. So that doesn't make sense. And that argument that LCB legal is making is very dangerous. That is very dangerous because that argument says that if you agree with LCB legal, then you're a duly authorized constituent. And if you don't agree with LCB legal or you don't agree with a measure that was passed by the legislature, which they deem, you know, is deemed valid until proven otherwise or ordered otherwise by the court, then you're not a duly authorized constituent of the organization. I mean, the voters decide in Nevada who are constituents of the organization. LCB legal or the legislative council or the chair of the legislative council don't get to decide who are constituents of an organization. And under the rules of professional conduct, there's nothing in 1.13G that says that LCB legal or another member of the organization gets to decide who's a duly authorized constituent of the organization. So, I mean, that interpretation or that argument is going to totally tear down the rules of professional conduct with regard to organizations and that subsection G. Because there's nothing that says that you have to agree with the legal position of the organizational lawyer to be a constituent of the organization or to be a client of the organization. And it, you know what? LCB legal's arguments, they're all abstract. They're all abstract. They're not dealing with clients that are sitting right here, members of the legislature that are counting on them in the future to be neutral to them and to perform their duties in a neutral manner. And those clients don't have the opportunity to change law firms like attorneys do in private practice attorneys. If they don't feel that the attorney is doing their best efforts on behalf of the client, if they don't feel that the attorney is being loyal to them, if they feel that the attorney, the LCB attorney, is putting somebody, another LCB member or another legislative member's interest over their interests, they don't have the ability to change their attorney.
Well, Ms. Pearson, it kind of goes back to the question I asked Mr. Powers: Is there a mechanism to get the senators or whoever wants to challenge this law, this extension of the sunsetted taxes, without having this fight between the members of the legislature have to work together, you know, every session and all, and I don't know, somebody's paying you on that to represent us, so it's costing money for somebody. I mean, is there a better way of doing this and getting to us? Because if we get the question, we'll answer it. I have no idea what the answer is, but we'll certainly do what we think's best legally and get it done. How else can we get it to the Supreme Court and get this resolved?
Well, I mean, we're here, and you're
well,
hearing.
We're here, and we'll decide this issue. Yeah. But I'm just trying to think of the big picture here, we're trying to get a resolution of this issue.
So it would be very helpful if this doesn't ever happen again, and you provide some guidance for the future for the legislative process, and you need to provide guidance that this government lawyer is also an organizational lawyer. And under Rule of Professional Conduct 1.13G, that lawyer can't represent constituents unless it complies with the rules of professional conduct with regard to conflicts.
Ms. Peterson, can I ask you a question in that regard? Going back to a question I had earlier, why were they necessary to name individual members?
So, and I, you know, it's hard because I don't want to have to give up a lot of our strategy.
Well, and again, that goes back to that very issue. Was this strategic in naming them to cause a conflict?
No.
Go ahead.
No.
Why were they necessary?
So number one, Majority Leader Cannizzaro, she also received the opinion. Okay? So obviously she should be named.
And well, why? You know, the executive agency to enforce would be the Department of Taxation, Department of Motor Vehicles, whom you named.
Well, I think if you're going to challenge a LCB legal opinion, that you would want to name all the other parties that received the
opinion. But is there authority to that effect that you need to name them and they're necessary?
I think you need to, under the declaratory relief.
Let me ask you this. You know, Justice Hardesty had indicated some language in the judge's order, and this struck me as a little odd. It's on page 8, and it's a statement that was made right after they indicate LCB is disqualified. Then he makes this interesting statement. The plaintiff's senators may, in their sole discretion, voluntarily dismiss the legislative defendants. Why would he do that? What does that mean? If they're necessary, why would he even make that statement?
Obviously, he didn't have that issue in front of him, and he made that very clear at the oral argument, that there was no motion that they were necessary parties. So,
like foreshadowing?
Pardon?
Is that foreshadowing?
I don't know. But they are statutory, and the other defendants that were named, constitutional officers that have an obligation to uphold the Constitution of the state of Nevada and the laws of the state of Nevada. And under the enrolled bill doctrine, we wouldn't have been able to name the legislature as a defendant because we wouldn't have gotten the dismissal. Probably had a motion to dismiss filed for that.
Did you need them, though?
I would say we didn't need the legislature at all. No. But we did need those parties. We absolutely need those parties. Because they were the ones that violated the Constitution when they approved that bill.
Thank you.
So, that's why we got them. But, and again, I'm going to ask you to look at this as practicing attorneys. When you had clients, and put yourself in our client's shoes, where they're sitting here at this behind this counsel table, and their LCB attorneys are sitting over here on this side of the courtroom.
Ms. Peterson, let me ask you, can LCB take a legal position contrary to the vote of the legislature? So, for instance, if they hadn't sued the legislative, Ms. Cannizzaro and sued the secretary, could LCB have represented these senators in suing to find that action of the legislature unconstitutional?
No.
Okay, why not?
Because the senator's action would be contrary to LCB Legal's position that the legislation's deemed constitutional and valid. When passed?
Wouldn't it be because what was passed? I mean, what we will eventually have in front of us is the legal issue of whether legislation is constitutional or not, not what their opinion letter said. I mean, the legal issue is it constitutional or not? Right? The lawsuit's not against LCB's opinion. It's against what's the legal effect of this legislation.
Correct.
So they couldn't represent the senators, even if we didn't have other senators on the other side, which we do in this instance. Because that would be against the interest of the organization as a whole and the legislation that was passed.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Ms. Peterson, we know that Senator Settlemyer apparently sought advice from LCB Legal during the session. Senator Cannizzaro, Majority Leader Cannizzaro, also sought advice. Was there something improper by LCB giving that advice after talking to both of them?
No, in the context of the legal opinion?
Right.
No, there was nothing improper. But I think what was different about this opinion, though, was that it was directed to the leadership. So right. It included both sides. Okay. Normally, when I've seen the opinions, it's just directed to one member of the legislature. It's not directed.
Whoever requests the advice.
Whoever requested the advice.
In this case, both sides apparently requested advice.
In this case, both sides requested the advice. Right. So LCB Legal represented both clients.
So
and provided advice to both clients.
The fact that LCB Legal came to a conclusion that the two-thirds wasn't required, does that prevent LCB Legal going forward from continuing to give advice to those who are in the minority in the Senate?
No.
Like the fact that they had an opinion different than perhaps what their views were, that doesn't change that they can still give them advice.
It doesn't change that they can still give them advice, and we hope that their advice will be neutral. That's the issue with having the conflict.
The advice is neutral, but those receiving it, you know, it impacts the positions in the Senate. In other words, so LCB Legal drew the conclusion that two-thirds wasn't required. From a political perspective, maybe that favored one side or the other in the Senate, but that's not the basis for their conclusions.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that their conclusion was political.
And can they continue to give advice to both the majority and the minority within the Senate?
They can continue. And hopefully, again, it's neutral, it's nonpartisan, they're acting in the best interest of any individual legislator that comes to them and asks for advice.
Okay. So now, the way the case is currently, if we don't grant any relief in this case, then LCB Legal continues to represent the legislature, defending the constitutionality of what was passed, and presumably Senator Canizzaro and Ms. Clift would get different counsel.
Correct.
LCB Legal would still be there on behalf of the legislature.
What would
be the harm to your clients in that? Sorry. If we were to grant relief and allow LCB Legal to also represent Senator Canizzaro and Secretary Clift, what would be the harm caused to your clients that won't be caused if we don't grant relief?
It is the fact that the rules of professional conduct are violated, that there is definitely a conflict of interest. They don't even deny, LCB Legal doesn't deny that there's a conflict of interest, that the client's interests are adverse to one another. They don't deny that. I mean, they're arguing about whether they're clients or not, but they don't disagree that there's a conflict of interest. And so, under our duty of loyalty as lawyers that we owe to all our clients, we can't represent clients that are adverse to one another.
Well, but they're going to be adverse to your clients, whether we grant relief today or not.
But that's the legislature as a whole, the organization. It's not constituents versus constituents, and that's what the district court was so concerned about.
Okay, but the defendants we're talking about are Senator Canizzaro, named specifically in her role as Senate Majority Leader, right?
Correct.
She's not named because of something, and it's not like all the other senators were named. She was named because of her role officially in the Senate.
Correct, and she was the sponsor of the bills.
Okay. What did Secretary Clift do that causes her to be named a defendant?
She's under the statute. She certifies that the bill passed by the constitutional requirements. And that's the same with the lieutenant governor also. And that's all set forth in the complaint, what their statutory obligations are.
Right. And so they're named because of carrying out their official duties.
They are. And they absolutely should be named. Because if they're not carrying out their official duties correctly, then declaratory relief needs to be entered against them under the declaratory statute. It says you have to name all the parties that shall be bound by the declaratory action judgment. And the senators also make a claim, which LCB Legal totally ignores, about that their vote was disenfranchised and nullified the way that this was handled by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a separate constitutional basis for declaratory relief.
Ms. Pearson, let me ask you this. Let's take this hypothetical and say, let's assume this suit wasn't filed. Let's say it was ABC Business that has to pay this tax. It's not Sunset. It sues the Department of Taxation for declaratory relief if the tax is not enforceable because it violates the Constitution. Ultimately, that question could get to us, and we could decide it. Couldn't we, you know, and then I'm sure the LCB would respect our decision. We have the final say under Nevada law, at least Nevada Supreme Court, and that would get the issue resolved without all this fighting between the legislators and conflicts of interest, allegations, and all that, wouldn't it?
So, you know, your rulings on taxpayer standing are generally that the taxpayer doesn't have standing. Okay. There is a special exception if there's special circumstances. And so that's the way we pled the complaint with regard to the taxpayers and the senators, because their vote was nullified. I mean, an individual legislator doesn't have standing to bring an action that a bill was unconstitutional. But what gives these senators standing is that they constitute the two-thirds majority and their vote was nullified.
Is there a reason that you didn't serve the member defendants individually?
We did serve Lieutenant Governor. Nobody would accept service of process for her. So we had to find her and we served her. We would have found Majority Leader Cannizzaro and Cliff if we had to. We would have served them that way.
But you asked LCB to accept on their behalf.
No, we didn't ask LCB to accept. We asked LCB, how do we serve them? And the call was directed to Mr. Powers, and Mr. Powers said that he would accept service of process. And then he voluntarily filed the answer after that. And voluntarily entered the case.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Powers, you have 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
I'm sorry, Justice, that's the time over. Did you want 3 minutes
total? Oh, so 3 minutes. Okay.
It would be 42 seconds. Okay. So you just
give
me 1 second.
I'll leave it in your capable hands, the mystery of the... She has to reset the clock, so it'll be a minute.
Thank you for those extra 42 seconds. There's nothing abstract about the law. LCB Grill is not making abstract arguments. We're making legal arguments. The government lawyer exception is part of the law. NRS 218F720 is part of the law. And there's nothing abstract about saying a member who sues their own organization isn't acting as a duly authorized constituent. You're suing your own organization. You're going beyond what your official role is in that organization. This is why the government lawyer exception exists. Not only for litigation, but in the case of LCB Legal, we couldn't provide bill drafting services or we couldn't provide opinion letters because every time we provide legal information or advice to one of our legislative clients, it's bound to be adverse to the interest of another legislative client. We essentially provide that type of advice to one legislator that's adverse to another's legislator on a daily basis, multiple times a day. We have to, because when we tell an individual legislator, we're providing you with this advice about your bill, it's necessarily going to be abstract to another legislator's, adverse to another legislator's bill. And the same with opinion letters. But the government lawyer exception in Rule 1.11 provides us the ability to do that because the drafters of the model rule understood this situation would arise. And that's why they included the exception. With regard to LCB Legal representing other legislators in other case, in particular, Commission on Ethics versus Hansen and Commission on Ethics versus Hardy. LCB Legal represented those two legislators in their official capacity, with this court mentioned in footnote 4 of Hansen, because their defense was legislative immunity, which was a beneficial defense for the organization. We represented Hansen and Hardy in their official capacity because it benefited the organization, not because they were being sued in the official capacity. It was because that additional step, it benefited the organization.
But here, Ms. Peterson saying that from the perspective of the plaintiff senators, they're alleging that their constitutional vote was diminished unconstitutionally because the two-thirds was not applied to them. That strikes me as an institutional claim.
And how do we resolve that? The rules of the game are a presumption of constitutionality. That's what this court establishes. We presume the legislators act as constitutional until it's declared invalid by a court. The rules tell us we defend the constitutionality, in this case that the Senate passed it by a majority and we believe it's constitutional, until a court tells us otherwise.
So, Mr. Powers, let's assume for a moment if the opinion during the session had come out the other way, if you looked into it and determined we think two-thirds is needed, but the legislature, the majority, went ahead and did what they did anyway, approved it without two-thirds, it passed, signed, went on, and you had a suit like this. Would you still be defending the constitutionality, even if that were different than what your opinion was?
If the legislative commissioner or the chair directed us to defend the constitutionality, yes, we would. And then we would have to argue, we provided the opinion, the legislature acted contrary to it, but it's their right to pass legislation, even if it's contrary to our opinion.
So it's not about what your opinion was.
That's correct.
Per se.
Correct. And this.
And here on the end of the time, the clock was set in a confusing way. But I'll give you 30 seconds to wrap up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, this is all about the government lawyer exception. It exists for a reason. But more importantly, this is a strategy that the plaintiff senators chose to sue their organization, but to bypass the actual organization, sue the members in an official capacity, which essentially created this conflict of interest. Had they just simply followed the rules of the game, where the taxpayers sue the department that administers the law, this would have never come up. They chose this path, but fortunately for the legislative branch, the government lawyer exception allows LCB Legal to represent these legislative defendants in their official capacity to defend the constitutionality of legislation, because that's in the official interest of the legislature. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. I want to acknowledge that Professor Seth Floyd is here with his appellate practice class from UNLV Boyd Law School. I neglected to do that at the outset, but welcome and thank you for coming today. With that, we'll be in recess. I thank the lawyers for their excellent work and we'll deliver a decision as expeditiously as possible.
All rise.